this year starts a series that I hope to give on a common theme, and that is, this should have been posted on the e-board, for some reason it didn't get up there, but the theme is Rebbe and Talmud. And anybody that's ever been a Talmud or a Rebbe knows that the relationship between a Talmud and a Rebbe can be very, very complicated in many ways. And there are a variety of agadotas scattered throughout Chazal which explore different facets of that relationship. In a way, the agadota we did about Yeshu, you may recall, about how the Gemara understood why Christianity began, was also a story about a Rebbe and a Talmud. And it's not surprising that Gemara would be full of stories of Rebbeim and Talmidim, because that's what the Baalei Gemara were. They were Rebbeim or Talmidim. Starting Talmud, then they became a Rebbe. So there are quite a number of stories, and they're all very interesting. And I think anybody who wants to go into chinuch, if anybody's considering that, a rabbanus would do well to learn what the Gemara has to teach us about what it takes to be a Rebbe or not. But I think any person, anybody who's ever been a student, and everybody here is a Talmud, you know, let's kind of look more deeply at how Chazal understood that relationship. So the first Gemara we're going to do in this series, this is the end of the year, so I suppose that the series will continue next year, Meretz Hashem. But this Gemara that we're about to learn is a very, very, very famous Gemara. Extremely well known, and it's a Gemara which is often learned or cited to demonstrate how much of an anav and a gadol Hillel was, a great Hillel. And the famous story about how this person came and asked him these annoying questions and how Hillel responded to it. And the overall takeaway of this agadah is that Hillel was an extraordinarily patient, tolerant Rebbe and person. And that's definitely true. It's definitely a major takeaway of this agadah. But we want to learn it, as we usually do, in much greater depth, to kind of unpack what I think are many nuances in that overall picture. So let's learn it together. This is Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. It actually starts at the very, very bottom of Lamed Amud Beis, but instead of photocopying two pages, I just wrote the first few words on top. Maisa b'shnei b'nei Adam is a story about two people. Shehimru ze eseh, who colluded one with another. Amru, and they said, Kal mi sheyelech v'yaknit es Hillel, yitol dalid me'ozuz. Whoever can go and annoy Hillel to the point where he reacts badly, angrily, will win 400 zuz. It was kind of like a bet. That's who can aggravate Hillel enough to get him to react angrily. So it's like, anybody want to try that?
Well, just do something I would do.
But now you're getting older, so right? Yeah. You're going to be the one that they'll soon be coming to try to annoy.
Yeah.
And it's not too hard. Okay, so let's see what he said. Amar echad mehem, ani akni tenu, I'll be the one who will annoy him. He volunteers. His name was Mendy. Oso hayom, that day, Erev Shabbos haya. It was Erev Shabbos. The Hillel chafaf es rosho, and Hillel cleaned his head. So he, I guess he got just come out of the merchatz, and he had washed up and just cleaned his hair. In those days, they didn't shampoo every week. Every day, so that's what he did Erev Shabbos. Halach vi avar al Pesach beso. So this man, who has no name, the maknit, never given a name of the Gemara, went to the door of Hillel's house. Amari said, Mi kan Hillel. Is there anybody by the name of Hillel around? He repeats it twice. So that sets the stage for the unfolding story. Now, why is it significant that this is Erev Shabbos? What's the significance of his having just washed his hair? What's the significance of his standing outside the door? What's the significance of his saying, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel? Remember, the overall thesis of my limud of the Gadarta with you is that every single word, every single phrase has significance. This is a Gemara. Just like any Gemara, you learn Baba Kama, the Ian. This also has to be learned by Ian. So there's got to be some significance to this whole thing. So I pose the question, Mendy being the Machnit.
Finding every possible way to be obnoxious.
Yeah, okay, good, excellent. So how?
Erev Shabbos, when everyone knows what the house is like Erev Shabbos, right, when he was in the shower, cleaning his hair.
Of course, they didn't have showers. He had to go to the Merchatz, but the same idea, right? Everybody's rushing around, right?
But outside, he has to make him leave. Good. Is there a Hillel around? Not even Rebbe Hillel was here. Everything he could think of to make him like already stand
perfect.
Up in the back.
You were mechavin exactly to the Marsha. That's exactly what the Marsha says. And maybe you want to add to it as well. Did you want to add to what Mendy said? You want to add?
No. I mean, yeah, I want to say the same thing.
Okay. You guys, for some reason, you think alike. It happens, right. But yes, my shas is exactly that. Erev Shabbos, busy, not the time when people are least patient, like, you know, it's going to be the most likely time to annoy him. He expects Hillel to come out. Like, how about going and knocking in and coming in? Oh, come on out! You know, like, and Hillel's a Nasi. So Mikan Hillel, like, is anybody by the name of Hillel around here? Like some Rabbi Hillel, I read about him on the internet. I mean, you know, he was a Nasi B'Yisrael. Like, he's as Rashi himself says, these are all derogatory terms. He repeats it twice, he yells at the door. It's like, not very respectful. I mean, you wanted to go to, Steinman to ask him a shaila, you wouldn't pound the door. Is there anybody by the name of Rabbi Steinman out there? It would be very disrespectful. You know, you go in. You know. So he's obviously doing everything he can to annoy him. Okay, so Nis'atef, Hillel wraps himself, Atifas Rosh, V'yatza L'kraso, and he goes out to greet him. He goes out to the person. He doesn't expect the machnit to come to his space. He goes out, which is a sign of anivus. You know, come into my house. Let's sit down and let's talk like a mensch. Why, you know? But he sort of goes along with this machnit. What's with the Atifas Rosh? Anybody know when Atifas Rosh is typically used according to the halacha? What's that? I can't hear. Yeah, well, that's tefillin per se. What? Talis. Yes, benching. Dayonis, when you sit as a dayan, you have to be wrapped yourself. What's that?
You're married.
No, there's no din of marriage. It's a din of tefillah. And certain times during tefillah, there's a din of ativas rosh, which is why people cover their hair during certain parts of tefillah, being a dayan.
And
it's a bad hair day. Bikur Cholam, Mivakar Chola, the halacha is, you're supposed to, now obviously we don't practice all these things. If somebody goes to the hospital, they don't put a talis over their head. But they wore talisim much more regularly than we do now. But what's the significance of Atifas Rosh? Now, as I've given you some halachic models for Atifas Rosh, but why specifically does Hillel wrap his head in the talis before this... And by the way, Hillel knows that this guy is being annoying. Because Mikan Hillel at the door, Erev Shabbat, he knew like this. I mean, I'm sure sensed something was up. So why is he wrap his head? Like, what's the significance of that? It's very unusual. It's not to be expected. As you know, I'm a Rav in a shul. If somebody comes to my house and they ask me a shaila, I don't put on my talis and put it over my head and answer it shaila. You know, like that. Have you ever seen a Rav do that? No. So what? Now, of course, times were different, but what's the significance of it? Yes?
He's about to take part in an act of Avodas Hashem. He considers his tolerance of holding back his anger and being a Rebbe and being patient all part of his Avodas Hashem. So before he gets himself ready, he has to wrap himself, remember what he's doing this for.
Let me rephrase that a little bit, but I think basically you're on the right track. Let me just rephrase it a little bit. Not all Avodas Hashem requires Atifas Rosh. I mean, if you take a little Vanessa, you don't have to have Atifas Rosh. So it's not all Avodas Hashem. It's something specifically related to what's this encounter with this very annoying guy that Hillel chooses to put on something over his head. So it's not just Avodas Hashem. We need to refine what Mendy's saying. Yes, John?
Yeah, I was thinking that, and I could be wrong about this, but I was thinking that a Tikvas Rosh is almost like a sign of submission. So, like, not just preparing for an Avodah, but a specific mode for preparing for Avodah. Like, I'm about to submit myself to something higher.
That's interesting. Diane, so... Yeah, yarmulkes. Yeah, I guess yarmulkes is a little like that. So, I think there are multiple aspects of this. When somebody covers his head, that's a sign that there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you have a task to do, which you need to engage in responsibly, seriously, self-control. When you're a dayan, I mean, think a dayan is a perfect example of this. And what Hill is doing is answering Shilas, which is not so different from Dayanus. You know, so when Bala, you know, Tohen and Bala Dinim come to you, people who have a case, so the Dayan has to respond carefully, thoughtfully, with self-restraint, not impulsively. You can't be impulsive. You need to control yourself. You need to show respect. Respect. So Ativas Rosh is you're showing respect. There's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as you say, it's a kind of a submission to Hashem. What I think Hillel partially was doing was by covering himself, he's trying to protect himself from getting annoyed at this person. It's, as I say, it's self-restraint, like you cover yourself. So restrain yourself, Hillel. You know this guy is going to be annoying, but restrain yourself. It's to show this person how seriously he's taking it. And I would say something else as well. There are some rabbanim you may have seen in your life, and this is different from Israel, the United States. In Israel, for example, many rabbeim, rabbanim, they dress more casually, more informally. My son-in-law is a rav in Clifton. Anybody here from Clifton Passaic? He's a rav in a small shul in Clifton. And his name is Schwab, Daniel Schwab, of the Yekesha tradition. And he has this Mesorah, probably going back to his grandfather, Shimon Schwab, but also reinforced by his Rosh Hashiva, that he never goes out of the house without it, or anywhere, I mean, except maybe his backyard, but never goes basically out of the house without a tie on. It took me a hard time to get used to the fact that my son-in-law, after he became a rebel, all of a sudden always wore a tie. Like, I didn't always wear a tie. But what that is, what that's about is that you're always attired in the, how shall I put this, in the uniform of your position as a rav. You know, you're always a rav. And when people see you, they relate to you, they see you in your professional attire. It's a little bit, lahavdil, but a little bit like, say, a physician in the hospital. They always dress like a physician because that's their professional attire. And Hillel putting on the garb of a dayan, Ativas Rosh, is he is knows that this guy's going to be annoying by garbing himself in the Ativas Rosh, in the professional attire sort of a dayan. He is constraining himself to be professional. You know, when you're dressed like a physician, you have to act like a physician. You can't act like a clown. You know, you're, the way you dress shapes how you respond. And Hillel may have taken this precaution of Ativas Rosh to make sure that he would succeed in what he suspected, probably, and in fact accurately, to be a very, very challenging and difficult encounter. So if you're all dressed, you know, in open shirt and, you know, without a jacket, you're more relaxed, and in that context, you might say stuff that you'll later regret. So if you're dressed, you know, properly and primly, and you have Ativas Rosh and your tie and your suit and whatever, you're more likely in that context to respond professionally and not personally.
Carry yourself differently.
Yes, you carry yourself differently, exactly. So these are all factors. Submission, as Josh said, you know, to the great task of being a Rebbe. And there's a lot at stake because, as everybody in this room knows, if a kid asks a Rebbe an important question to that kid, and the Rebbe blows him away, blows him off, why are you asking such a stupid question? What are you, an apikores? You're asking such a question? You know, what do you think is going to happen to the kid? Not necessarily good things. And The way a Rebbe responds to an annoying Talmud can have a huge impact on the overall religious trajectory of that Talmud's life. We all know that. Everyone has seen, hopefully, many examples of good Rebbeim answering questions well, but we all heard stories that we haven't seen ourselves of Rebbeim answering questions negatively, and that could be very, very harmful to a Talmud. And so Hillel takes every possible precaution to make sure that he responds to this Talmud appropriately, with dignity, with respect, with self-restraint, as a professional, as it were, nasi, like a dayan, with a tifas rosh, sober, self-controlled, the model of a great Rebbe. I think it's very, very significant, that's a tifas rosh, for all these different reasons. Yes?
Just two things. First, Yeah. Is that Yeshu is a perfect example of that. Like you're saying, his Rebbe turned him off.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. Exactly right. These are all studies of the various ways in which Rebbeim should or maybe shouldn't interact with their Talmidim.
Right.
Exactly right.
On a basic level, very basic level, maybe it was just because of the fact that he just washes hair.
Tifas Rosh is a halachic category. It's not just like he put a towel on his head. He came out and there's a bathrobe. Atifas Rosh is, and it appears in the Gemara many, many times as a way of dressing halachically. So it definitely has halachic significance, in my opinion. Okay, so what does he say? Nisate fiyatza lekraso amarlo bini ma'ata mavakesh. My son, what do you seek? Notice he calls him my son, which is interesting. Amalei, we'll go back to that in a second. She'ela yeshli lishol. I have a question to ask. Amalei, he said to him, Sha'al b'ni sha'al. Ask my son, ask. What do you hear in the way that Hillel calls and relates to this mekanter? Yes?
When he says matzah mevakesh, almost sounds like he's asking, what are you really trying to do?
Oh, beautiful. Okay, what do you see? What are you really seeking? I love that. Great point. What are you really after? What are you really seeking? That's a very, very good point. I like that. Thank you. I didn't think of that. What's this sha'al b'ni sha'al? What do you hear in that?
Eagerness.
What?
Eagerness.
No, not necessarily.
He's being fatherly.
Yes. Sha'al b'ni. Sha'al. Ask my son. This is a very warm, fatherly, loving greeting. I think that's what it is. The repetition, sha'al b'ni, sha'al, very repetition. He repeated twice, he calls him my son. Hillel is appearing, you might say, bedu anpin, in a duality. There is the professional garb of the great Rav, the Dayan, but there is the warmth that emerges from Hillel's greeting to a person who he suspected, rightly, probably, was going to be as annoying as could be. And I think that part of the message here to me is prospective Rabbeim and Rabbanim here. And hopefully all of you, whether you become a professional Rav or Rebbe, you will give shiurim and your shul, your community, even if you don't go into chinuch as a career, is that the best antidote to an annoying student is love. Love them. It's not so easy to do, by the way. This is very hard. And don't expect, and I have some experience, many years teaching, in my shul, there is one guy in my shul who is an absolute mekanter. He's exactly, he doesn't ask crazy questions like these, but I'll give a shiur and I'll say, and this is Rashi Shita. Rashi is wrong. All right? Okay, that doesn't make any, very, very aggressive and in public. So, I personally have a lot to learn from Hillel, and you have this over the course of, there are some people who like this. Sometimes meet him, a seventh grader can be very, very annoying. They can in class. I mean, you would never know that, Mendy, I'm sure, or Josh. But you know, you'll have these experiences. And what so far, what I'm hearing from here is Atifas Rosh, but also love. Love is a very powerful, just show the person. And this continues, this theme continues. So let's look at the first question. Ne'ma Rashehem Shal Babliim Segal Galos. Rashi has two interpretations. I'll just mention one of them. Why are the heads of Babylonians oval? According to another interpretation, it's circular. The heads of Babylonians are misshapen. Either they're perfect circles, which is weird, or they're ovals, which is weird, according to two Pshatim and Rashi. But in either case, they're misshapen. Why are the heads of Babylonians misshapen in this way? Now, that is one weird question. I mean, Erev Shabbos, just out of the Merchatz, you know, I mean, rushing to prepare for Shabbos, and this is what he has to ask him. Like, it was not a Shabbos shayla. It's not like, you know, what should I do? You know, I left the water urn off or whatever. It's like, which, you know, Rabbanim get these questions. What am I supposed to do? Erev Shabbos, this is like, why are the heads of Babylonians round? It's obviously a purely annoying question. So, Amalei, he said to him, Bini, my son, the same paternal love. She'ela gedola sha'alta. You ask such a great question. Right. You ask such a great question. Why? And here's the answer. Mipnei she'ein lehem chayos pichos. Babylonians have poorly educated midwives. They don't have clever midwives. And therefore, when the Babylonians are delivered as infants, the heads come out squished. All right, kind of an interesting answer. We need to send those Babylonian midwives to some kind of midwifery school. But anyway, that's the question. So I'm going to now run through this next series of questions and then reflect about what's Hillel's answer. I mean, the main kasha here is the Marshas, which is, why does Hillel treat these questions, and we'll see the rest of them, but and I'm going to read them in a minute. I don't want to answer the Marshas question just yet, but here's the portal here is, why is he so patient? Why does he accomplish Ela Gedola Sha'alta? Like, this is a totally bizarre question to ask Erev Shabbos. And why this question in particular is not, but the Marshal's question is, why, if he had come with a shayla and halacha, even if it was a dumb shayla, okay, you know, shayla gedola shalta, but this is not even a shayla halacha. This is like about why are Babylonians' heads shaped where they are. So that's the Marshal's basic question. So let's look at the next series, the rest of the series, and then try to answer the Marshal's question. Okay. Halach, he went out after getting the answer. V'himtin shah achas, he waited an hour. Chazar v'yamar, and after that he said, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Round two. Getting closer to Shabbos. Nis atef. Hello, Tifas Rosh, again. V'yatza l'kras. Amalo b'ni. Ma'ata mevakesh, the same, even though he knew this guy was annoying because he already asked him an annoying question. Ma
tamavake. You still showering after an hour?
Or no, I guess no. He wasn't showering at the first. No, no showers. But right. No, I mean, obviously he's getting closer to Shabbos and he's less busy with that. But, you know, I mean, you're still busy Erev Shabbos. Everybody knows you're busy Erev Shabbos. So the same annoying kind of question. Ma tamavake. Amalei she'ela yeshli lishol. I have a shayla. The same language. Amalei she'al b'ni she'al. The same loving response. Why are the eyes of Tarmudians weak? Or that's one pshat in Rashi. The other pshat in Rashi is why they're round. Amalo bni she'ela gedola sha'alta. Mipnei shedaran ben hacholos. They live in sandy places, and since they live in sandy places and it's windy, the wind blows the sand into their eyes, and they have poor vision. Okay, halak v'himtin shah achas. He went, waited another hour. It's now I guess, momish right before Shabbos. The Gemara, and he said, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Now, I mean, what's this Mikan Hillel?
He knows
he's there, he knows who he is, and he keeps on pestering him with the same disrespectful language. Not Hillel Hanasi, Mikan Hillel. So it's obviously really bad. Nisate Fiyatza Lekresa. Same response. It's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, who would have the patience to do this? I would not, for sure. Amalei b'ni b'nei ma'ata mavakesh. Amalei she'ela yeshli lishol. Same lashon. Amalei sha'al b'ni sha'al. Next question. Mipnei ma ragleim shel afrikayim rechavos. Why are the feet of Africans wide? Spein hashmashas. Like, this you need to know right now? Amalei b'ni, my son. She'ela gadola sha'alta. The same thing. And they shadaran ben bitzei hamayim, they live in swampy areas, and therefore they need wide feet so they don't sink in the swamp. Okay? So what's this about? That's the last of the series of questions. So we have the Marshal's question. That's a big, it's a serious question. It really cuts to the core of what this Agadot is all about. Why is Hillel so patient and tolerant, she'ela gadola, she'alta, she'ela gadola. I mean, what kind of she'ela gadola is that? She'al b'ni she'al. That's, yes?
Do you think Hillel knew that he's going to get reported into the Gemara and, like, he's very famous to this? That's the motive that I can understand.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, but I'd like to believe that Hillel was doing it because he thought it was the right thing, rather than he thought it would be published. When he was teaching, nothing was ever written down, remember? You know, his writing came much later. Hillel was before the Mishnah, before anything. His Torah Shebaal Peh, you're not allowed to write things. It could be he thought that, you know, this would appear on, you know, Facebook and people would know about it, ancient times. But, let's assume that he was, like, focusing on what was going on. Yes?
And it could be I'm reading a lot of this, but maybe there's a possibility of this, that this person who's clearly being very strange is coming to him and asking really strange questions, like, why are these people so weird, essentially? And Hillel, it has to relate to this really weird person.
Oh, I love that, Josh. Great point. I'm going to come back to that and put it in my own way, but it's such a wonderful point. Maybe because I thought of it myself. But no, I'm going to segue into that. But that's a very interesting point, and I'll develop it. Yes, Mendy.
Do you think that Hillel thought this guy was trying to be obnoxious or was just socially off?
No, I think he thought it was so obviously obnoxious. Yeah, this is more than.
I know people so who are so obviously obnoxious, but it turns out
could
just
be.
Like
okay, could
they
be.
Don't pick
could
up
be.
On social cues.
It turns out that he was intending to be obnoxious. So reading was correct.
But,
okay.
So Hillel comes into each situation without any preconceived notions. I'm just noticing the fact that he always rewraps his head, which means he didn't expect him to come back, even after when it became a pattern. It was a redone situation. I rewrap my head, I go back out and ask him talk to him the exact same way, as if it's a completely new person, because the question that he wants to ask me has nothing to do with the person. He's just viewing it as...
It sounds like he's talking to somebody with special needs.
Yeah, but that's what we, in our 21st century perspective, would read. I don't think that they had that category of special needs particularly, but more importantly, the person was intending to be Mekanter. That is the most simple reading of what, that's the true reading.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me go back. So the Ein Yaakov, excuse me, is it the Ein Yaakov? The Ion Yaakov, I think it is. Yeah, the Ion Yaakov, one of the Mefarshim on the Ein Yaakov, answers the question. So I'll start with his answer. And this, by the way, is also what he says. I can't say that I'm the happiest with this explanation, but it's worth reflecting about because of those of you who become Rabbanim and Rebbeim, this is a significant issue that he raises, and it could be that the Ion Yaakov, who's probably a Rav himself, had this experience. And I know this from my own experience. If somebody comes and asks you a dumb shayla in halacha that you really know the answer to, so if you don't welcome that shayla, and if you critique or you're negative towards the asker, guess what he won't do again? Come to ask you a shayla when he has a really big shayla. So every Rav or Rebbe wants to encourage shaylas, even if they reflect ignorance, and even if they're annoying, to make sure that when a real Shiloh comes, this person asks you the Shiloh and doesn't go off and do the wrong thing, which is a very, very good point. And I know one posik in particular, I won't mention his name, but I know one posik in particular who always does this. Person comes and asks a Shiloh, a really obvious Shiloh. He'll say, I've heard him do this. What a really good question is. You know, there's the Gemara says this, and the Torah says this, and he'll build it up and make it like it's a real Shiloh when it's not a real Shiloh. But he'll make it look like, oh, there's a real issue here, and you know, and there's the Gemara, and there's the Torah, and there's Beis Yosef, and the Mishnah Berurah, you know, even though it's kind of obvious, and you don't need that whole thing. But by building it up, people feel very, very comfortable asking him Shilohs, which means, by the way, that his cell phone rings all the time, which may or may not be a good thing. But from the perspective of a Rav, it's very valuable to encourage Shilohs. So that's the Ion Yaakov's reading, and I think it's a possible reading of the Gemara, and I think it's certainly worth thinking about. That kind of takes it away from education, more in the way of Rabbanus and Psak. Does that mean that we have to end?
No.
Okay. So this person is a Makantian. And as I've mentioned to you before, and this is the Sha'al B'ni, Sha'al She'ela Gadol, it's the same B'ni, it's the best response he'll maybe saying to an annoying student is to just show him love. Build him up. Why is a kid being annoying? Sometimes kid is bad self-esteem, angry, stuff is going on in the house, who knows what. You know, why will this Talmud of yours, if you have Talmidim, or a member of your shul, ask annoying questions? Because there's something problematic in his or her life which is leading them to be annoying. And by the way, my own shul, I know that's the case with this person who consistently annoys me. He has a very unhappy life, and I know that. And I continually try to keep that in mind when he responds to what I'm teaching in ways that I think are just plain old aggressive. You know, it's just not like, he doesn't like ask me, he'll tell me, because, you know, just disagree. It's very aggressive, and it's not usually the way somebody will relate to a Rav. Now, I know he has an unhappy life, and, you know, maybe I'm projecting into Hillel's response from my own life situation, but I can hear Hillel saying, you know, Sha'al B'ni, Sha'al, what's Mavakesh, you know, Matam Mavakesh, as Josh so brilliantly said, you know, what are you really after? Like, what's going on in your life? And often, when people are unhappy, they ask these nasty questions, shower them with love. Make them feel, build their self-esteem, make them feel better about themselves, and that may be the most effective means of addressing their shyness. So that is another way of thinking about it. And I'm projecting into this my own life experiences, but by doing this, what the teacher is doing, the Rebbe is doing, is maintaining control of the situation. If you lose it, who wins? The Makanter, the annoying kid. By showing love, what the Hillel is doing is maintaining complete emotional control over a problematic situation. He's not allowing the student to break the love that a Rebbe should always demonstrate for a Talmud. And that is a way of maintaining control and of using this kid's annoyance, or this student's annoyance, to shape and build the educational encounter. This kid's annoying and you show him love, what you're doing is you are shaping the educational encounter the way you want it to be shaped, not the way he wants it to be shaped. So that's another perspective. Now I'll give you one other perspective, which is borders on what Josh was saying before. Think to the following question. Is there any common denominator amongst the three Shilohs? Think about it. What's common amongst the three Shilohs? Yes? That's true, they're all relevant, but irrelevant in what way? What are they all about? Yes?
All regarding people's
Yes. 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 Did you want to add to that?
It's just a physical differences.
Yes. They're all physical deformities. He asks consistently about physics. Eyes, feet, head. He keeps on asking about they all relate to human physical deformities. And now, the story may have, he may have just done this because he did this, right? Those are the questions he asked. But the Marsha, for example, reads these three shilas as being symbolic of three different nidos. I find that to be somewhat far-fetched, but I do believe that every word in the Gemara is there for a reason. The Masadrei HaGemara knew exactly what they were doing. They didn't have to mention the exact shilas. So, because it's in the Gemara, my thesis, and this is Marsha's thesis too, he doesn't articulate the presupposition, I'm going to go in a different direction, following the same presupposition as the Marsha, is that these questions are significant to the theme of the Agadita. And what I want to suggest to you is that the questioner is coming to Hillel with problematic human beings. And what Hillel was telling him, She'ela gedola sha'alta, is every human being has worth. He could have blown off the question about the big feet of the Africans. Why didn't he do that? What he was teaching the Mekanter is, oh, they're African, but they're human beings? We have to take them seriously. We need to understand every human being for who and what he is. We don't just blow up somebody because he has weird eyes. If you're a human being, we need to respect you. And we need to understand why your eyes are big, or why they're weak, or why they're round, or whatever. Maybe we don't need to care so much about the eyes of a salmon, but you're a person. If you're a person, this every human being, by virtue of his humanity, merits serious reflection about why he is the way he is. And so, whereas the Mekanter is annoying Hillel with human deformity, Hillel is teaching the Mekanter that every human being deserves respect and serious consideration, ba'atifas rosh, just like you. I'm taking you seriously. She'ela gedola sha'alta, sha'albani, because you're a human being. And you are exhibiting to me deformity. Not physical deformity, but moral deformity. You are behaving towards me in ways that are inappropriate. You are as deformed, as it were, as the three examples that you gave me. They're physically deformed, you're morally deformed. And just like I am taking seriously your questions about these deformed people, I am taking you seriously as a human being with your deformity. And I'm not going to allow myself to get angry at you. She'ela gedola sha'alta. You've asked a really big question about the human condition. And the she'ela gedola that you've asked about the human condition is, do human beings as individuals merit respect irrespective of the bizarreness of how they are? And my answer to you is that they merit respect, and I exemplify my answer to you by the way I answer you, that you too deserve respect. And I would suggest even further that what he's really telling him, in Josh's brilliant reading of Mavakesh, is, what are you thinking about? Why are you, Hillel is in effect asking the Mekanter to ask himself the question about himself. You're asking about the Africans and the Babylonians and the Talmudians. Ask about yourself. Why are you coming to me in a deformed way? Why are you being a Mekanter? Just like I am taking you seriously, just like I'm taking the questions about the Africans seriously, take yourself seriously And Hill may be plumbing to the depths of this McCunter's deformity that he just doesn't take people seriously, including himself. Think about yourself, you McCunter. Try to understand where your Kinter is coming from. Why are you the way you are? Just like you want to know about the Africans and the Babylonians, think about yourself. Why are you adopting the posture of an annoying questioner to get me aggravated? Just like I'm answering your questions about them, you need to answer the question I am in effect posing about you. You need to answer that question. Think about who you are and where you're coming from. So let me just finish the Agarata. Continues as follows. Amalo. So the Makanter says, She'elos harbe yeshli lishol. I have many questions to ask. Umsyori ani shema tichos. And I am afraid that you will get angry. Nis atef. Again. Tifus Rosh. So amazing, Hillel. V'yashav lefanav. And he sat before him. Does it say anywhere that he sat before him before? First time Hillel is described as sitting. He is now descended. He's established. He is now, this challenge, the way I read the Agarata, is now focused. He's sitting. Let's deal with this issue. Let's deal with it. Kol she'elo she'yesh lecha yishol sha'al. Any question you have, ask. Including maybe questions about yourself. Amalei, atahu hilo she'koron oscha nasi b'Yisrael? Are you Hillel whom they call the Nasi of Yisrael? Again, the same negative, disruptive, disrespectful posing of himself. Amalei Hain said yes. Amalei Imatahu Lo Yarbu Kamoscha B'Yisrael. We don't want any more of you. Amalei B'ni Et Neima. Again, he maintains the same loving composure. Why? Amalei Bipnesh Ibaditi Ayodcha Dalad Meozuz. I lost $400. I bet. I remember I bet. I would get $400 if I succeeded in angering you, and I failed. And you cost me $400. 400 zuz. So how does Hillel respond? Hillel responds, given what we are to expect, in a what is called a volta face, an about face. We get a whole new, other, antithetical side of Hillel. It's shocking. B'ni, listen to me. He says, Amalei have zar baruchaka. Watch your spirit. Kedai hu Hillel shete avid al yado dalad meyazuz. The dalad meyazuz. It's worth your losing 400 zuz and another 400 zuz over Hillel who doesn't get angry. This is a different posture that Hillel is taking. He's reprimanding him. Why does Hillel change? This is the conclusion of the encounter. Hillel, as much as he loves this Talmud, as welcoming as he is, and as probing as he is, as brilliantly probing and tolerant and accepting as he is, he's still a Rebbe. And he is insisting on the duality of that relationship. A Rebbe needs to love his Talmidim, accept them, even if they're Makanter, She'ela Gedola Sha'alta. But at the end of the day, you're the Rebbe. And that dialectic, that duality of the relationship of a Rebbe, loving, caring, building his self-esteem, respecting the Talmud, needs to be paired with the self-respect that a Rebbe deserves. And I will conclude with this observation, that that duality of love, tolerance, respecting even the most ornery and annoying Talmud, together with the self-respect that a Rebbe must have to be successful, achieving that balance is one of the most difficult and challenging tasks that a Rebbe can have. Yes.
That theme they were saying that.
Welcome to the chair.
That theme they were trying to say.
Josh Green.